Welcome to the SBS Digital Learning Hour, brought to you by the Digital Learning and Assessment Department. We're coming to you today from a conference room in Central Office, bringing you the latest news in Springfield Public Schools in regards to technology, along with inspiring interviews from teachers who are using technology in the classroom. I am your host, Mike Thomas, the Bearded Tech Ed Guy. You can find me out on all the socials at Bearded Tech Ed, my own personal website, beardedtechedguy.com, and you can find me out on the We Learn page here in the My SPS. Before we jump into today's awesome interview, I just want to share with you just a couple of updates, things that you might not have noticed. Number one is the latest blog post out is all about reading progress. Now, this tool is one of Microsoft's best, and they just made some announcements that it's going to become even better. In the post, we actually talked about how you can go through and assign it in your classroom and the things that you can do. And we referenced the previous post when I talked about it in the past. I encourage you to go check it out. We also talk about how to use Teams when you are not in a remote setting. That is also another great blog post to read. So I encourage you to check that out. If you spend any time on the We Learn page, you would have learned or seen the 23 tools for 2023. It is our digital learning and assessment challenge for 2023. Each challenge gets you a badge and points. Points gets you on the leaderboard. There's a lot of different things that you can do, including the very simple of having a personalized email signature that is professional looking, to using cool tools like Wakelet, Flip, Nearpod, and Newzella in your classroom. Now, a lot of these things you're already doing, so this would just be a way for you to get credit for what you're doing already. Not only do you get badges, not only do you get up on the leaderboard, but you can also win prizes. And we give away prizes once a month. If you check out our February newsletter, when that comes out, you'll learn who the first prize winner was. For our final announcement today, I also just want to make sure that you are aware of some learning opportunities that are coming up soon through Nearpod. If you go out to our newsletter, you'll see all the information about Camp Engage. It helps you continue to use Nearpod and grow in your Nearpod abilities. And a lot of great teachers contribute, a lot of great ideas and things that you'll definitely pull back into your classroom. Because as we know in this district, we use Nearpod quite a bit. So go check it out. It's Camp Engage. You'll find it over on the Nearpod site. I'll also make sure that there's a link in the show notes to it. So for this week's interview of the week, I met with Victoria Ellis at the virtual school. Now, Victoria has had a great history inside of the district. She's been teaching for a little while, and she's been at a bunch of different middle schools, and she's currently at the virtual school. So you'll hear all about kind of her journey with technology that has led her to the virtual school, which is something that started last year. Check it out.
Hi, my name is Victoria Ellis. I am currently at Springfield Virtual School. I've been teaching for, 15 years, I think. This is my 15th, most of that with the Springfield Public Schools. And I am a math teacher for grades 6 through 8. This year, I'm concentrating on 6 and 7.
Awesome. So 15 years in the district. You're teaching middle school right now. Have you been middle school the whole time?
I have. Not always the same grades. I've bumped around between 6, 7, and 8 and throughout my time, but always middle school.
So what was your first middle school here in Springfield?
It was actually one of the alternative schools, and they've changed names a few times. I believe it was Springfield Public Day Middle when I started there, and I taught 6th grade math. It was back when we were on Copernic Street, so it was a long time ago. I actually started as a para before I was a teacher.
Oh, wow. So yeah. Those early years, with it being an alternative school, many of our listeners probably don't know like what goes on necessarily at an alternative school. So what was teaching 6th grade math like for you?
It was actually some of my most fun years when I was teaching at the alternative schools because the class sizes were very small. The students at alternative schools just need a little bit of a different style of teaching. They need a lot of the times more supports, just kind of a different perspective, I guess you could say. And so I got to be very creative with the way that I was teaching and kind of not completely do my own thing, but I had a lot of freedom. And you really got, there was a lot of emphasis on really getting to know your kids and building relationships first, which is great because I see that a lot now in almost all of the schools. But it really started there, and that kind of like shaped everything for me right from the beginning.
Yeah, I know that in my teacher education courses, that was one of the things that was always emphasized was creating those relationships. Mm-hmm. Early on in teaching, so you were over there, what kind of technology did you have?
We actually, and I feel like I'm dating myself, but we still had like the overhead projectors and like transparency sheets and like the vis-a-vis markers.
Oh yeah. With the, like, people can't see what I'm doing right now, but like, yeah, you get the, marker,
like
all
the
over
marker
the
all over the side of your hand. Yep. Yep.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it grew throughout the years. I think we got our first smart boards my second or third year, but we were in older buildings and older places because, you know, unfortunately those schools get forgotten about when they're smaller schools. And, I remember teaching kids how to measure angles using an actual overhead, like transparency projector.
Oh, those are the
days. Quite different than now.
Very different. Especially because I remember when I was using transparencies, if I was making a lot of copies or the copy machine had been used a lot before I got to it to make my transparency copy, mm-hmm. I would tend to melt the transparencies in the printer.
Yeah. And it's so funny because it really wasn't that long ago. And you realize like just the difference, like how far we've come from then to now. It's astounding. Like, yep. And I tell my students sometimes the things that I used to do, like they have no idea what a transparency is. They, you know, it's just like completely such a foreign type thought to them. They're like, what are you talking about?
Exactly.
Like, they don't even know like the desktops. I'm like, oh yeah, we had one desktop in our classroom. They're like, what?
I know desktops, they're very popular for gaming now, but other than that, everybody else has got a laptop or a cell mm-hmm. phone that can be a laptop.
Right.
Were you, before the virtual school, which is where you are now, you've bounced around to other schools. What other middle schools have you been a part of?
Most recently, I was at Zanetti Montessori, which is K-8 or preschool mm-hmm. through 8. And I've also, I was also at VanSickle many years ago. So I've seen kind of everything from like really big, huge, like huge populations of students in one's class all the way down to teaching with like 3 or 4 kids, which mm-hmm. is kind of cool.
Yeah. When I went through my teaching school in Vermont, and then I started like doing my practicum, the school I was at was a K-8 school because most of them were that way because of the size of the population was not huge.
Right, right.
So I always liked that dynamic.
It is a really nice, because like, it's like very family oriented. And by the time the kids get up to the middle school part, it just like they know each other so well. And it like the school really does feel like a family.
Absolutely. So since you have been teaching, when did you feel like you started to use technology in the classroom?
It was probably within that first couple of years, like right after we got rid of those transparencies and we started getting things like smart boards. And it's fun, like being a millennial, I was always the one that they went to like, oh, you know what you're doing. You're the technology guru. So can you show us how to, you know, set up the whiteboard or the smart board? I was always that teacher in the building. Mm-hmm.
So 6th grade math, I think back to one, because I taught 5th grade and I would have the students from time to time go up to the smart board and manipulate objects on there. Now, did you do that with your 6th graders too, or were they too old to do
that? No, they weren't. 6th grade is that perfect little sweet little middle grade where they still want to do all of those fun things. Like they still want to really participate. They still care about impressing the teacher a little bit. So yeah, they loved going up to the smart board, and we did a lot with like fractions and a lot with back then it was like common factors and common multiples and being able to actually put things in Venn diagrams and physically move things around or move numerators and denominators with different representations. It was really a powerful teaching tool for them.
Nice. Yeah, I really liked the smart boards and the smart notebook software for that. I remember I don't know if you did this with math, but I would always, at the end of a unit for review, we would do Jeopardy. Like I had a Jeopardy template that I used and just filled questions in, and it became very competitive. So.
Oh, yes. Jeopardy. And then somebody sent me a while ago the Weakest Link one, too, which got even like more competitive than the Jeopardy. It got bad. And then I also started doing double elimination tournaments with kids where they would have to come up to the board and they would get a question and go head to head. We'd have little, I bought like the little buzzers that made different noises.
Mm-hmm.
That was probably the most competitive I've ever seen the kids get.
Yeah, I had bought, I think, probably similar buzzers from the Scholastic, where it was like a cow and like a chicken, and like whoever got theirs first got to answer.
Yep.
Broke many a buzzers.
Yeah. Yep. I think one year too, I had like someone had given me a taboo buzzer as well. And I'm like, that was the worst one though. That was the worst sound.
I don't know. Scattergories is pretty bad. So the Scattergories sound.
See, I've only played Scattergories online in the last 5 years. So I'm not even.
Oh. It's know. Bad. It's a very annoying. It's a very annoying buzzer. So maybe if you have played it not online, maybe you just put it out of your mind.
Yeah, just forget it exists.
Just forget it. It doesn't exist. So when you were at Zanetti before going to the virtual school, mm-hmm. what were some of the things with technology that you were doing with your students?
I mean, I tried to have a good balance between technology and still hands-on. Because with math, I think that you do need both of those things. Even at the virtual school, we do. I don't know if you're familiar. I mean, you probably are, but Desmos is something that I used a lot and still do. We actually have at the virtual school, we have a full Desmos curriculum, which is really nice. I use a lot of things like quizzes. But Desmos is probably my biggest go-to. And then the curriculum that we have in Springfield has a lot of the online portions of it as well. But Desmos is probably my favorite because there's a lot of different ways that the kids can experience the math hands-on, but virtually, which is nice.
Hmm. So it
saves a lot of mess.
Yeah, I imagine because manipulatives, especially when you start getting up there with fractions, can those little 1/100ths make a big mess.
Well, there's one the biggest mess that I have every year when I do it is a lab to show linear versus nonlinear relationships, and the kids have to fill vases with water or rice, but both make an equal amount of mess, I found, to find the shape. And then they have to decide, they have to like figure out the shape of the vase based on the shape of the graph. But that's probably the messiest it gets.
Very much so. So during the pandemic, at the beginning of the pandemic, you were at Zanetti, right?
Yes.
So at Zanetti, when you had to go fully online, did you find that a difficult transition for you, or was it difficult for the students, or both, or?
I think it was difficult for everybody at first, but I think at Zanetti, we just had a really good team. Because we had that, what was like 2 full weeks of planning time before anything actually went live. And it was really nice because we got to work out all of our procedures. And as a middle school team, we knew like exactly how things were going to run. We were able to communicate that to the families. And compared to some stories that I've heard from other places, it definitely was as smooth of a transition as it could be. For me personally, it's always crazy when you completely change the way that you're teaching, like in a matter of a few days. But I'm pretty comfortable with things online, so I liked it. I thought it was kind of a fun challenge to find new ways to teach some of these things that I've been teaching for a while.
To kind of piggyback off of what you just said there, what did you find easy about teaching online? Was there any particular unit or skills you were trying to get your students to master that by doing it online, they seem to really grasp it pretty easily?
I don't know if there's any units per se, like anything specific mathematically, but the organization of everything with class, like not having to, not like kids not having to have papers everywhere or like keep up with like the physical part of things, and being able to make a course online where everything was like very nicely organized and kids could go to and have all of the materials that they needed. I think that aspect made it the absolute easiest. And then some of the materials, like I said, with Desmos and the other IM curriculums, curriculum resources, really helped with visualizing some of the graphing and some of the linear relationship and proportional relationships. There's some really cool ones where it was like turtles racing that the kids really, really loved. And it was like nice videos that the kids could watch and start making connections. And without those contexts, I'm not sure I would have come up with that on my own without seeing it in like the Desmos curriculum first.
To kind of go along with that, what was kind of the more difficult aspects of teaching math when you were remote, that 2020 to 2022-ish, before we were back in concurrent learning?
Some math is just so hands-on. Like, for example, teaching area was one of the hardest, and still is for me, one of the hardest things to teach online, because, like, kids just need to get their hands on, there's something magical about graph paper, if you will, like, and actually physically holding a pencil and putting it to a piece of graph paper and being able to see that this rectangle has six squares that make up that rectangle. It was definitely a lot more difficult doing that kind of geometry work solely online, but we found ways to get around it.
Awesome. So, which my next question kind of leads me to where you are now. Did you find that when you were teaching remotely, like, is that where you kind of like found your sweet spot? And is that why you moved to the virtual school, or were you looking for a new challenge, or what kind of precipitated that move, I guess would be the best way to put it?
Yeah, I guess a little bit of both. The cool thing about the virtual school is it was born from the pandemic, but the virtual school is not forced, right? So the people that come to the virtual school are the kids and the families that did well with it. And there were a lot of families that really thrived with the virtual learning, and they realized that that was a lot better for them. And when they made the virtual school, it's really directed more towards that independent learner, the kids that do have the space at home to really dedicate to like a learning space, and the kids that can, you know, be a little bit more independent in terms of being able to go online and check their assignments and stay in front of a screen live for 50 minutes during a class. And I was excited to work with a new school. I think it's a really fun challenge to come in at the beginning of a school while it's still like in development. But then also to work with these kids that they really want to be virtual and they want to be online, and they get excited to, you know, sit there. And while we're not physically together, they are still live classes. And so they are still, it's just like being in brick and mortar, just we're all at our own computers. So I thought that would be fun. And it is.
Mm-hmm. So there's, so with the way that school is done at the virtual school, there's asynchronous time and synchronous time, or is it all synchronous time?
It's mostly synchronous time. There is some asynchronous time built in at the end of the day for things like office hours where kids need extra help, for planning time for teachers so that we can get together like that. But their classes, like the regular class schedule, it's all synchronous. So the kids are all there live with us learning, just like they would be like in a regular classroom.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's fun.
So one of the things that you've mentioned with doing math is having those manipulatives and those hands-on. How has that worked with the virtual school? Is it like you mail out like manipulatives for them to use? Do they come and pick up like a box of stuff, or like what is that process?
So at the beginning of the year, we had a pickup where the kids can get all of the materials they need. But a lot of them, the majority of what we use is a virtual manipulative. And we use, like I said, Desmos has a curriculum that is completely aligned with illustrative mathematics, which is what the brick and mortar schools use. And it's just a really nice replacement because, you know, when the kids need to graph something, it's as if they have the graph paper. If they need to model what a fraction looks like, they have that built right into the program. So it's really nice.
Awesome. Now, with us having touch screens, and I imagine the virtual school, most of the students are using the Springfield laptops.
Yeah, everyone is. Well,
do the students have styluses that they'll use to like write on the screens? Like, have you experimented with that at all instead of it just being mouse and keyboard based?
Some of the students do. That hasn't been implemented in a way yet where all of the students have access to it. I would love for that because it would be a really nice addition to what the kids are doing. And you can see a difference in just the work because a lot of our programs, you can see the work as the kids are doing it. Like you can see them drawing right on the screen. I think that would be a great idea for the future for our school. Yeah.
Yeah. I know OneNote has that ability now where you can actually replay it, which is pretty awesome. So like if a student, you can replay everything the student writes. So even like what they erase and start over with, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. Cause that's the piece that is one of the more exciting things about having a new school is that when there's new ideas and new things that come up, we can implement them with relative ease because we kind of have.
Yeah. So now that you are steeped into the virtual school, is there anything that you're looking forward to being able to do with your students, like that you haven't tried yet?
I'm just excited. I'm hoping that I'll be able to keep the set of students that I have now to see how they like develop with their virtual learning throughout middle school, because I have a really good group of sixth graders and I would just love to see how they evolve as virtual learners, starting from sixth grade, getting all the way up to eighth and then into high school.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I loved when I worked at the K-8 schools is like if I had students, because when I first started, I was a substitute. Like you said, you started as a para. I started as a substitute. Yeah. And so like I long-term subbed in classes with that were like second and third grade. And then like the following year, I'd be like a third, fourth grade long-term sub. So like I got to see the students grow. So I imagine with the virtual, it's very similar that you get to see students grow. Now, what is the class size like? Because I could see it going one of two ways where you have like 80 students in front of you at one time. Yeah. And I can also see like because of breaking schedules down, like you could have 10 students at a time. Yeah,
it's actually right in between that. I have for sixth and seventh grade right now, my sixth grade classes are a little bit bigger. They're hovering around 20 to 25 students. And then my seventh grade classes are smaller. There's actually more seventh grade classes. So I have anywhere from 10 to, I think my biggest is 17 in seventh grade. So they're relatively small as far as classes can go, which is really nice because it can be harder to form those relationships when people are online. So it's nice to have the smaller classes so you can really get to know the kids that are there with you.
Yeah, I liked it when my years of teaching when it was 20 or less students in my classroom.
Yeah, and it's just nice. And it's having such the smaller classes, it's easier for me to check in on students individually. We can, you know, I can throw them in a breakout room real quick. We can have a 3-minute conversation and it doesn't really affect the learning, but it really does impact the learning in such a positive way, even though we're talking about, you know, anime and video games or whatever it might be that day. Mm-hmm.
Now, because in some ways having the virtual classes allows you to actually develop those relationships deeper than in person, are there things that you've learned about, like not even related to like school necessarily, that you learned from the students that you now enjoy yourself? Like you just mentioned anime, for example.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a big thing. So we have a Fun Friday incentive for the kids, where they can come and hang out virtually in breakout rooms at the end of the day on Friday if they get all their iReady done. And I have no art talent whatsoever, but I volunteered to be in charge of the art room, and the kids have taught me how to draw so much, like all sorts of stuff. So a lot of it's anime, but all sorts of other things. I've learned more about art this year than I have in my whole life, probably.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
It's really great that they're able to even teach you during that time too. So it gives them a lot more ownership.
Yeah, it does. And it's nice to just see them in like a different light. And then we also, we have crew twice a week as well, which is like advisory. And I let a student gets to do the music of the day each time we do it. And so I've learned a lot about music, actually, a lot about bands that I had no idea of, a lot about K-pop this year too, in fact. I'm thinking of it.
But... Well, that kind of goes along with the anime, so.
Yeah, it's really funny because the K-pop is so much like the boy band era, which was my middle school years, was like NSYNC and Backstreet Boys and 98 Degrees and all that. So when they play these K-pop bands for me, I'm like, do you not know anything about NSYNC? Can I teach you?
It's like, here's BTS. Well, here is Justin Timberlake in NSYNC.
Right. It's literally the same dance moves.
Yes. I have seen some of it. So yes. So before we run out of time here, I would be remiss to ask, especially because you're virtual now, what are some things that you're doing to take care of yourself? Because when we read the digital learning playbook back at the beginning of COVID, that was the very first chapter. And for me, it struck a chord because as a classroom teacher, I was terrible at taking care of myself. I'm a little better now, but I'm still working on it. So what are you doing to take care of yourself?
It's funny because you would think teaching from home, it would be easier to take care of yourself, but it is so easy to fall into just sitting down at my computer at 7 o'clock in the morning and not getting up until 4. So one of the things that I bought myself was the under the desk treadmill. And I love it. So whenever I have my prepper, some of my students will yell at me now if I'm not walking on it. They'll be like, Miss, you're not walking today. So that was one of the things, just to make sure that I'm actually like getting up and standing up. But also we are, my dog makes sure too that I take her out for a walk every single day. It can be very hard, especially with a new school, but I also try to stick very much to work hours and non-work hours. I think it's really important, especially new teachers and younger teachers don't follow that very often, but I think it's a really, really important thing to set the boundary of work hours versus non. And for responding to emails, responding to parents, like you really need to take that time for yourself and put the work down and go hang out with your friends, your family, your dog, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. And that's probably the biggest thing that I do.
Awesome. And that's a great spot to leave us at today. So thank you for taking time out of the middle of your day. Get up, enjoy, get walking on that treadmill. And
I will.
We'll talk to you later.
All right. Thank you so much. Yeah.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thank you, Victoria, for taking time out of your day to meet with me. I love hearing your path from being a para in the district, moving all the way up to a middle school math teacher. So if you ever want to know how that process works and how you can go from being a para educator, which is an awesome job, to being a math teacher for middle school, which is also an awesome job, she's definitely one you should reach out to. Thank you again for spending some time with Victoria and me today during this podcast episode. If you like what you heard, please make sure that you go out there, you rate and review, and leave us some feedback on your favorite podcasting platform. Now, if you're an iTunes user, make sure you definitely go out there because that's how we can spread the word on how awesome Springfield Public School teachers are and all the amazing things that are happening in the classroom. So I encourage you to go over there. If you love the episode, make sure you give it 5 stars and you help us out by helping us move up the board. We are available on all major podcast platforms. If there's one out there that we're not, that you're like, oh, I really wish you were on that one, send us a message and we'll get ourselves right on there. It is very much appreciated when you do all these things. It helps us out. It helps us continue to grow the voices here inside of Springfield.
Well, that's it for this week. I'm Mike Thomas, the Bearded Tech Ed Guy, and this is the SBS Digital Learning Hour.